Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRTLP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. You can find us online anytime you like at kdrt.org/Davisville. I'm Bill Buchanan. I'm your host. Thanks for tuning in. Well, it's been more than a month since the Davis Enterprise stunned and angered a lot of people in Davis by laying off Bob Dunning. He is, of course, the writer who wrote the Wary Eye column about people and news in the community. He wrote about sports. He emceed events in Davis and for the paper and became the best-known community journalist in town for several decades. After the Enterprise laid him off, he moved his column to Substack, renamed it slightly to The Wary One, and within a week had enough paid subscribers to more than replace his salary at the Enterprise. This sequence of events is one of the best recoveries one could realistically imagine in the circumstances, I think. Bob has appeared on Davisville before and returns today to talk about his new venture, how it's doing, how he's doing, and a lot else. Bob, thanks for visiting with us here today on KDRT.
It's a joy. It's a pleasure. It's an honor.
So how are you doing? I mean, it's been a roller coaster couple of months for you, and it's, of course, it's all played out in public.
Yeah, it has played out in public. I've never traveled at the speed of light before, but it's kind of interesting. And I was meeting somebody for lunch the other day downtown. And he was sitting at the back of the restaurant. He got there before I did, and he kind of hailed me from the back of the restaurant. And I started to work my way through the restaurant. I'm stopping. Bob, oh, hey, what happened? You know, on and on and on and on. Or, oh, I just subscribed. And I finally get back to his table about 15 minutes later, and the first thing he said is, you should run for governor.
You know, I can piggyback on that a little bit. It's pretty rare that I have a conversation with anyone in town about what's going on at the Enterprise. But when word was just getting out that you'd been laid off, one of my neighbors down the street saw me at the mailbox and came outside and said, so what's happened with Bob Dunning? And I told him what I thought had happened, which is to say, I was pretty sure you weren't with the paper anymore because your column hadn't appeared, it wasn't online, and so on. The point I want to make here is he came out to ask about you.
Right.
I can only imagine what you're getting.
Yes.
And I imagine that's dying off a little bit now because you're established.
Well, it's amazing. I swim every morning, and it seems like I can't even get in the pool because I can't get to the water. And once I'm in the water, somebody comes by who's getting out of the water and wants the story. But then there's a whole group of people that will say, are you still writing that column with the paper? Which means they don't take the paper anymore, you know. And so there's like kind of two classes.
No, that's right.
In the know and not in the know.
And of course, there's going to be a third group in town, too, who will say, who's Bob Dunning?
Yeah, exactly. You know, because there's three or four of those people right now.
Yeah, well, probably a little larger than that.
Well, you know, it is interesting, though, just what's happened with the Davis Enterprise over time is declining subscriptions, even as the town grew. You go out into the newer areas, and the newer part of Wild Horse, and as the town has moved eastward, primarily where the new stuff is, almost nobody takes the paper. Paperboy comes down our street and throws one paper, maybe.
Yeah.
And in the old days, they've thrown them to both sides of the street. Long before what happened to me, they were in a steep decline.
One of my thoughts about this is that the Enterprise, like a lot of newspapers, it's not unique to them, has been cutting and cutting and reducing stories they've covered, reduced coverage areas, certainly reducing staff. I think a moment like yours, when they lay off a guy who's worked there half a century, and anybody who knows Davis will not be surprised by the reaction that it engendered, at least among people who still read the paper. It's one of those real sort of wake-up moments. I mean, I think for a lot of people, it probably said, wow, this has really gone a long ways now.
Right. The odd thing to me was that I've always said that I was fortunate to work for a small community paper where the owners lived in town. So many papers have been bought up by big chains or conglomerates or hedge funds or whatever. I don't even understand what that means. But I'm sure some guy in New York is looking, okay, well, we've just bought this and we need a better bottom line. A columnist? A daily columnist? Gone. Frosting. You know, sports? Nah, it's child's play. You know, that kind of thing. And pretty soon, and then they're running a bunch of press releases and they're running a lot of stuff that they're running in their other papers, just canned stuff.
Yep.
and you're the first to go.
Now, that isn't the case at the Enterprise, though. The McNaughtons
live in town, yeah. The two brothers that are owners.
Yeah, that's Foy and Bert McNaughton.
And, yeah, and so that, I've always felt that was a good thing because they cared about their neighbor picking up the paper off the driveway. You know, I mean, they live in town. And so I would have thought I was surprised. I mean, they always told me as long as there's a paper, you've got a job.
I think the story resonates with people for several reasons. I think to a lot of people, it's cathartic. And it's cathartic in the sense that most people work and because of how it ended.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't want to make light of the turmoil that you felt, but the basic storyline was you got bounced from your employer after decades on the job. And in response, you get a nice raise, a huge display of public support, and more control over your work. I can't imagine, though, that the McNaughtons kind of didn't see that coming. I mean, that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense to me at all. People, you know, I remember being interviewed I've been interviewed a few times, and where, especially when it's in person, where the reporter puts down the notebook, puts down the pen, or the tape recorder or whatever, turns it off, and leans over and says, "What really happened?" You know, like, just between us guys, what really happened? And I just say, your guess is as good as mine.
Well, I was about to say, just between you, me, Bob, and whoever's listening to this.
What happened?
It's economic, I think, right? That's what people assume.
Well, yeah, but, you know, and in my farewell column, I put, and it was hard to do, I put what I was actually making because it was embarrassing.
I mean, $26 an hour.
$26 an hour. And people say, oh, maybe I made that up. No, I mean, I can show you the pay stubs. It's $26 an hour.
Yeah.
And for the first 50 years, I was exempt. And
so exempt meaning, in other words, exempt from overtime. And
You could work as many hours as whatever. And the state law is to be an exempt employee, the minimum they can pay you is twice minimum wage. So if minimum wage is $16 an hour, they have, based on a 40-hour week, even though you can work more than 40 hours, that's the whole. And I've been exempt from the day I was hired as sports editor in 1970, just because those kinds of jobs, and then especially a columnist, which is considered to be a creator, like a political cartoonist or a columnist, a lot of editors, you couldn't, how long does it take you to write a column? Well, once I get an idea, how long does it take to get the idea?
Yeah.
And then you chase an idea and you get halfway through it. You go, there's not a column here.
This is a bad idea.
Yeah, it was a bad idea. You're just starting over. You've done all this research and you've played with it in your brain forever. You've scribbled down a few notes when you wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh, this is a good idea. Because by morning, you won't even remember what this great idea was that you had in the middle of the night. And so it was always exempt. And then one day I wasn't exempt anymore, and they said 26 an hour, and I'm going, this is virtually impossible to do everything I do, to write 4 or 5 columns a week and cover 2 major sports beats, UC Davis football, UC Davis men's basketball, especially when all those things are going at the same time. Basketball, college basketball and football now overlap. In the month of November, basketball has already started. I mean, they start practicing in October, but and they're playing real games in November. And football that's the height of the season, right, going down into the playoffs. Just, you're working enormous amounts of hours.
I do want to say, Bob, I appreciated that you put your hourly amount in there. And I mean, as a journalist myself, a statistic like that catches attention. People will look at that. But did I understand right now that you were getting paid more per hour, but they made you exempt, and so they...
No. Okay. No, I was never making more than 26 an hour.
Okay. In your whole 55 years there?
Yeah, absolutely not.
Wow.
Because being exempt, they always had to pay me twice minimum wage. About 4 years ago, California passed a law where the minimum wage went up by $1 an hour.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Each year, every January.
Yeah.
Well, so it got to 13 in 2020 or 21, which meant 26 for me, which comes out to about $54,000 a year annual salary gross. And that's when they took me off exempt because they could, I don't know what their thinking was, but next year it would be 14, the next year it'd be 15, and now it's 16.
Yeah, so I was sitting here thinking 26 isn't twice minimum wage anymore.
Not anymore. But at the time they took me off, they took me off in 2020, right after my 50th anniversary. So the reason I put it in, and this was my maximum wage. It wasn't just this, just where I happened to be one time that I used to make a lot more. The reason I put it in, as embarrassing as it was, is I knew people would think, okay, he's been their lead columnist. He's doing all this stuff. He's been there 55 years. He's making 80, 90, 100 grand, and his little paper can't afford that. And I wanted people to know that that wasn't the case. That was they had just hired somebody in September who's still working there, you know. And I mean, I don't know what that person's making, but you got to figure it's close to 20 or 21 or 20. So your savings isn't very much when you lay off somebody that's making 26.
Well, no, and I guess my point is in lost subscriptions, lost ad revenue, and, you know, general poor opinion of the decision, I got to believe, I mean, okay, you're 54,000 plus benefits, et cetera. Let's say it's 80. Well, I mean, you would have had health care, right? They would have paid insurance premiums.
Only a percentage of mine, nothing for the family.
Okay, so
nothing.
Okay.
The benefits were no contribution to 401k. They paid a percentage of just mine, my health care, and then my family, I had to pay all of that. So it was the benefits were very slight, very slight.
See,
used to be better, and the sort of the medical package you get every year, it goes up every year. And what what used to be free, or what I got a bill for that blood test or something, you know, and you're going, I didn't used to have to pay for that. So, oh, no, that's the new plan.
So we've had a lot of detail here, but I guess the takeaway is your total whatever was 60, 65,000, let's say.
I'd say 60 max.
And I bet you they lost more than that in terms of revenue right away. So.
No question. I mean, I remember when I first got the word, and I got it in a phone call from my editor. Yeah. Which was, I knew we were going down to twice a week in print, from three, and I thought he was going to say you're going to have to do more, you know, we're going down to two, you're going to have to do more, you're going to have to cover high school football or something in addition, or you know we're going to emphasize the online more, so maybe you're going to have to write six columns a week. I was stunned, I mean I was just stunned, and after about 5 minutes of like I really don't believe this is happening. I said to him, I said, leave me out of it. This is a really bad business decision. This is bad for the paper. And his response to me was, yeah, you are our most popular feature. And I'm not anxious to see reader reaction.
Yeah.
And I'm like.
So it wasn't his decision.
I couldn't have been. I would think sometimes laying somebody off is probably his decision. He may get word from management, you need to cut X out of your budget and let him, because he's in the day-to-day.
Yeah.
But I would think laying off, trying to keep my ego out of it, but laying off somebody who's been there 55 years and has sort of been the ambassador to the town of the paper, it would have to be at a higher level than the editor.
So
I was surprised I did not hear that it wasn't lunch with the owners or something and saying or something, you know, a phone call saying, hey, I can't believe we're doing this, but we're doing it.
Have you heard from the McNaughtons or the Enterprise since you left?
Only from one of them in a sort of an apologetic thank you after it was all said and done, after I'd had my exit interview and was gone. It was he actually used the words like, how did it get to this point where we're laying off the voice of the paper and the soul of Davis?
Like, of course, that could be taken as a comment on the whole industry, right? As opposed to, you know.
Yeah, and I felt like, well, why did you lay off the voice of the paper and the soul of, and not like used to be, like now is, you know?
So
It still stuns me. I can't believe whatever at whatever level, what conversations went off where they didn't say, and I don't want to name names, but like, gee, why don't we lay off somebody we just hired who's, you know, why? I mean, because at 26 an hour, your savings are so slim, and you're saying you're taking a guy who wrote four a week now, but during football season it's five. And because I do an extra sports column during football season, and also is doing a major sports beat, and keeping people who are average enterprise reader couldn't even name who they are or what they cover, and saving a couple bucks an hour, maybe.
I do want to talk about your new venture, but I guess two final things. One is, when you got that contact, was that by email, and did you respond?
The contact.
You said from one of the owners.
It was an email.
And I'm just curious, did you write back? Or?
No.
Okay.
No.
Don't talk you plan to.
No.
And the other thing was, the editor, Seb, wrote a column, and I think he talked about, I haven't read it in a while, but, you know, there was some negotiation about staying or something like that.
No, he didn't say that in a column. He said that on Facebook.
Okay, and a comment on a...
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. He said it.
And was there
Facebook.
Any? I mean, did they come back to
none.
You?
None. And he even said on Facebook that he had phone records to prove that this negotiating... And I was still an employee for several weeks after being told. And sure, we had phone conversations. We had phone conversations like, what's the ETA on your Friday column? I wanted to be sure I had to turn in all my football expenses, my travel expenses. I wanted to be sure we got, and that's kind of a little complicated process. I said, what's the time I can come in? And he would help me make copies and get them into the system and all that kind of thing. I wanted to be sure that I had could take sick leave for a previously scheduled colonoscopy. There were certainly phone conversations.
But you wrote about that.
Yeah. And he was on in Facebook was making it look like, oh, I've got phone records. We were negotiating. He may have been negotiating with, because it leaked out. And I mean, I know how it leaked out, but it leaked out because I told somebody who was involved who ended up quitting, and he told somebody, and it leaked out.
This is the leak out that you were leaving.
Yeah. And I think they got some quick pushback. And they may of among themselves said, is there anything we can do? Is there anything we can do? But there was no negotiation with me.
Right.
None. Zero. But if you read his column about, yes, it's true, the wary eye is not here, there's nothing about any negotiation in there.
Okay.
At all.
Do a quick station ID. If you can't tell from the conversation, we're talking with Bob Dunning, formerly of the Davis Enterprise, now of himself, the Wary One on Substack. I'm Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville, KDRT, 95.7 FM, Davis, California, KDRT.org.
I should go back. If you go back and read it, the column from Seb was enormously laudatory. Over the top laudatory.
It was.
And basically he was saying, what led to this? We've lost this, and that's the way he's happening with newspapers. But he's a wordsmith beyond belief and all this stuff. And you read it, and then you read the comments afterwards saying, CYA, you know.
Yeah, I saw a lot of the comments. They were not running in his favor. Let's put it like that.
I mean, it was just like, you say all these things that doesn't – why did you lay him off?
So let's reintroduce Brian Boltz, or introduce for this interview. We talked with him here on Davisville show before this one, and he's a tech entrepreneur in town, and he'd done some things for your wife, Shelley, because she with her business, and then that's how you met him, and
right.
And he helped you get on Substack,
right.
And then Wendy Weitzel, who then left after you did voluntarily and moved
and
to Substack.
Left in right in her farewell column said, in support of Bob Dunning.
That's right.
And then later in the column said she was upset that I didn't get a severance.
Yes.
And she said, I waited a week to see if the McNaughtons would make it right. And I came to the conclusion they weren't going to. And so I'm gone. So it was very supportive of me and in about the dismissal.
Yeah, well,
in solidarity, if you
and she wasn't the only one. I mean, Bruce Gallaudet, former editor, former sports editor, he was sports correspondent. He quit when you were laid off.
Right
and,
away.
Tanya Perez and
there were a bunch. And my wife, who is writing a column.
That's right. What's it like now? You've been on Substack about a month, been writing digitally only. You're an old print guy. So digital came late in your career. How has it affected what you write or how you write or the topics you choose? And I guess embedded in that question are a couple other things. Is you have an opportunity now maybe to reach people in town who didn't read the Enterprise, who didn't care about the Enterprise, but they'll look at things digitally because that's where the market more or less exists now. Right. I mean, the Enterprise is online as well, but I mean, more and more people are looking just for digital product.
Well, but
how's it affected you as a writer, as a columnist, your subjects?
Shelley, my wife, told me a story that she has this store, a charcuterie store downtown, and charcuterie is the main thing. She sells a lot of tinned fish, which is real popular, and a lot of other things. But anyway, we should do an ad for her.
We kind of are here, Bob.
Yeah, she told me a story of somebody that came in their store who had moved to town about 10 years ago and said she and a number of her friends, they all take yoga together or they all do something together. And none of them had ever read Bob Dunning or even heard of Bob Dunning, which I think is very common among newer people to town because it just doesn't seem like there was much outreach to newcomers to town like, hey, from the paper, like how do you, subscribe?
Marketing, basically.
Yeah, but they heard about this like everybody else, and then they read my final column or my initial column at Substack, which were one and the same, and got interested and started reading for free on Substack, and they're now all paid subscribers, and they had never even heard of me.
Yeah, now part of that I think is the splash. I mean, that's what I mean by this
is a huge splash.
And so in a way you're going to have the sophomore challenge that people have, 1 year into a new thing is once you're past the initial rush, everyone's used to you being there. Then
you just don't want Sports Illustrated to put me on the cover. Yeah. That's the jinx of jinxes.
Okay. Well, you're probably safe from that, Bob. But, if Substack had a magazine, they might put you on the cover. But, I mean, I'm curious, because you've been a writer. Last time we were on the show, I think we figured out you've probably written more words about Davis than anybody.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
So what you write now is still of interest, I think, to the town. And so and in a moment like this, a silver lining can be they can be rejuvenating and refreshing because it obliges any individual who goes through it to think about, what do I want to do here? Is there something I've been missing? Is there something I want to add? Maybe I wasn't missing anything, but I want to add something. I want to go a different way. This is a chance for you too. And I guess I'm wondering if you're thinking along those lines.
Well, it's a little bit different because our son, Mick, who's 19, kids nowadays are born with technical ability. I mean, they just are. They're 2 years old and they know how to go online and do all these things. And so he gets into the details on Substack. And oh my gosh, he says, it was at the launch party, which was my first column on Substack was May the 10th. The launch party downtown that Shelley put on in the breezeway down there where her store is.
That was May 15th. Yeah.
May 15th. It was a Wednesday. So 5 days later, I already, according to my son Mick, was in 45, had subscribers, paid subscribers in 45 states and 21 countries.
Yes. So I guess what I want to know is what you're going to do with that.
Yeah. And I was like, well, maybe these are expats or, somebody that moved to Florida or something. But the numbers were so overwhelming so quickly that I'm going, who are these people? It can't be somebody in Florida randomly somehow hearing about this. And
well, I can tell you a little bit from Davisville, because this has only ever been, we do have a broadcast signal, but by and large, people stream. And a lot of these shows are like, I liken them to single copy sales.
Right.
Like people who are interested in you might listen to this, but maybe they're not going to listen to something else. There are people who will listen to this show, or better example is Don Shore's jazz show here. Uh-huh. He has listeners all over the world because they're drawn to the jazz. I did one on the Ukulele Orchestra of Great Britain, and I had 1,000 listeners in England that week,
Yeah.
But I mean, are you gonna write more or less the same way you've been doing? I know your frequency has been about the same. The
frequency has been about the same, maybe actually a little bit more. And Substack has no control. They don't exercise any control. I think they've got control over everything if they want to. Yeah. But they don't exercise control over how frequently you write, what your topic is. They have a, you know, a major disclaimer. We don't want racism, sexism, four-letter words, and pornography, and all these.
Yeah,
you know,
sort of a standard thing,
a
really.
A standard thing.
At least
that,
it used to be.
Yeah, and we don't want any of that. But other than that, I haven't heard a word from them about content, or we think you should be doing more or less, or but they're very good about support and helping you. I've tried to use a photo in with every column because it makes the page really stand out. And I like the page the way it looks, but they will instantly, after you post, they'll send you that photo with the headline of your column over it so that you can post it on Instagram and Twitter and or whatever it's called, X and all that stuff.
So, Bob,
very helpful.
We have just a couple of minutes left, actually, and of course we could go another half hour, but a couple of things I did want to cover. Are you interested in being part of like an alternative enterprise? I was talking with Brian about this because a moment like, I mean, I don't think you're going to, we're not going to get 15 people in town to each subscribe to 15 Substacks, each of which provides what the enterprise used to do.
Right.
If the enterprise retreats enough, that can create an opening or even a demand for some kind of alternative. Are you interested in that, or you want to kind of go your own way?
Well, it's real hard to say. It's been enormously energizing to have complete control, and it's as if the boss called you in and said, we have determined a way to calculate exactly how many readers you have. And we're going to pay you based exactly on that. You know, it's because maybe people don't understand the model. Substack, I don't work for Substack.
Yeah. They work for yourself.
I work for yourself. They take 10% off the top of a subscription. And that's that. That's the whole deal. There's no initiation fee. I don't owe them anything.
Yeah.
And I get paid exactly by how many paid subscribers I have. And if I get 4 new paid subscribers today, I just got a raise today.
So you're open to the idea of being part of something larger, but it doesn't necessarily
you'd really have to sit down and figure out what it is, because local journalism is in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And if you're talking about newsprint and paying CEOs and executive editors and all this. I mean, I think about those of us in the trenches, all our work didn't just go to pay ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
It went to pay the president. It went to pay the publisher. It went to pay the CEO.
An overhead, like any business.
Yeah, it went to pay newsprint. It went to pay paper carriers. It went to pay delivery. All that stuff. Now it's just my work. I get paid directly based on my contribution. How many readers did I earn?
And you know, we have to wrap it up there. And again, a conversation for another day, but of course, there's a dangerous path too around the idea that you're always paid for what you get. That's how we end up with clickbait and sensational stuff. So we've been talking with Bob Dunning, who has just got started on Substack about a month ago. Bob, thank you for talking with us.
TheWaryOne.com.
The Wary One.
That's like giving your 800 number when you're a politician.
Yeah, well, or kdrt.org/Davisville.
Yes.
So I'm Bill Buchanan. You've been listening to Davisville on KDRT. Thank you for listening.